Welcome to the weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Matt.
Hey, Matt. So Chris can't be with us this week, but Matt was kind enough to co-host, so thank you so much. And this week on the weekly, Tales of the Valiant starter set. It's a little bit of a collaboration. The Ninja Division bankruptcy, which is a chibi disaster. Daggerheart public playtest. Get those D12s warmed up. AI art promoting the Puerto Rico board game, like definitive or deluxe edition. And HeroScape returns for real this time. I think we've had that headline like three times already. All right. But we'll start with a collaboration between Kobold Press and Steamforged Games. So they're going to do a Tales of the Valiant starter set. So that's... It's an interesting choice because Steamforged Games had their disastrous re-release of their Dark Souls RPG. They were doing a 5e-based Dark Souls RPG, and they were releasing a super deluxe special edition, you know, gold foil book, and the system was unplayable. The character classes didn't even work in 5e, so they had to reprint and re-release these $150 books. So they are the choice for Kobold Press to release their Tales of the Valiant, formerly known as Project Black Flag, their take on 5e. So the thing that they keep reminding us, and I don't know if that's a real selling point, is it's fully compatible with 5e. So I guess, 5e's been out for a while. There's a ton of third-party stuff, but there really isn't that much stuff released officially. So do people really have these huge catalogs of 5e stuff that they need to keep playing? So I don't know. I don't know if I don't know if that's a big selling point, but they keep saying it. So they're going to do a new starter set to kind of get people into the system. There's not a lot of details. I would hope, because of the previous things that Steamforged has done, their little adventure sets, for 5e, that it has miniatures, because Steamforged does some fun miniatures, so that would be cool. And I'm not sure if Tales from the Valiant is doing like iconic characters or anything, which they should. I think that was one of the things that kind of endeared me early on to Paizo, to Pathfinder, when Paizo did their own take on 3.5, is they had their kind of iconic characters that were examples of how you, who you could play in this world, like the types of like unique combinations of characters. And that was the thing that even got me with Starfinder, is that they said, yes, of course, and our iconic characters could even appear in Starfinder. And they showed the Paladin as a space marine looking like, oh, come on, that's awesome. So they those characters have worked well for them to kind of connect you to that system and have it not feel like completely strange, you know. So, and of course they're in all the cover art, you know, you always see the same characters recurring in the cover art for the books for Pathfinder. But yes, it's a beginner experience, a gateway for new players. We don't have details about if it's going to take you from, you know, level 1 to 3 or however they're doing it. But the quote from the CEO of Kobold Press is, you could take your first steps into the hobby in a way that is easily accessible and fun. And they're also hyping the aspect that Steamforged Games has beautiful releases, so they're beautiful products. So hopefully that means they're going to have some nice maps and miniatures and things, although I'm not sure how Tales of the Valiant, if it's very, battle map based or not, you know, if it's how it plays, if it's very strategic. Yeah, so previously Steamforged released their Epic Encounters series, which are some really interesting creative miniatures and a simple kind of encounter that you can kind of drop into any of your D&D 5e campaigns. And those look really cool. So hopefully there'll be something similar to this, and that's why they chose Steamforged for this starter set. So what do you think? Is this going to entice you?
No. So... I hate to be the negative one, but Tales of Valiant, I think on here before I've remarked about how we've heard very little from them about it since it kickstarted and everything. And so I went and looked up some YouTube reviews, some early reviews. And the first two I watched both had very similar sentiment. It's just fifth edition. Right. So you know, it's supposed to be like this big going their own way kind of thing, but mm-hmm. it's not. It's mm-hmm. just fifth edition. Mm-hmm. And they're hoping to cannibalize some of the fifth edition folks.
Right.
And so I can't remember exactly the details, but there were just a couple little changes to mm-hmm. it, but really it's just fifth edition.
Mm.
And then on top of all this, now, which you're going to talk about in a little bit, mm-hmm. Daggerheart is coming on the scene.
Right.
So they're screwed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just calling it now. They're screwed. Like, they didn't differentiate themselves enough from mm-hmm. fifth edition. And now everyone who's into that kind of space is going to be talking about Daggerheart. And right. so they're like, and then eventually that other one with MCDM theoretically will arrive on the scene.
Yes.
And so, what is it? Kobold Press there?
Yes.
Yeah. They're, I'm sorry, guys. I think you're in trouble.
So, but this, think about how many systems now they can develop third party materials for. Yeah, that's the problem. Is if Kobold Press drops out with their system, if people just don't support it, then they're going to be stuck choosing between Daggerheart and whatever mm-hmm. to support. Yeah, I think they were really counting on maybe they saw this the OGL stumble as okay, what's going to happen is when they launch the new Dungeons and Dragons, it's going to be different enough from 5e that people are going to be frustrated and want to go back to 5e, but we will be 5e, you know, like they'll be standing there welcoming you back to that familiar system. Don't think that's going to happen.
I don't either.
Yeah, but they're trying, bless their hearts, as my grandmother used to say.
Yeah, they're not going to be the new 5e. Mm-hmm. And they can't be 4E because that's what MCDM is going to be, apparently.
Oh, wow.
And so, like...
Interesting, yeah. It'll be really sad, yeah, when they kind of announce, okay, we're going to stop support for this, and we're going to be supporting this system. It's like, you know, when your candidate drops out of the primaries and throws their support to another candidate, you're like, oh, we hate that guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see. But... yeah, I don't know. It was just, there wasn't anything really compelling. Although a lot of these things that are trying to take the place of D&D are not compelling in any way. They just have a little bit of clout behind them, a little bit of, you know, reputation or whatever. But it all comes from the same spoiled tree. All right. Well, even more depressing news we're going to get. Strap in. Thousands of Kickstarter backers are left out of pocket for a Super Dungeon Explorer Kickstarter campaign because Ninja Division is filing for bankruptcy.
No.
Yes. So the maker of those cute little chibi minis that you wanted in every one of your games and even Siege of the Citadel, even Modiphius partnered with these guys to do chibi Necromutants and chibi... chibi Doom Troopers. So they've been chibiing it up for a while, but that gravy train is over. So yeah, they raised more than $3 million via Kickstarter through several projects, but they are done. So their liabilities now are ranging, they're just estimating ranging from $1 to $10 million, and their assets are estimated between $0 and $100,000. Owed to 49 creditors. So there's a lot of molds being locked up in safes and things at this moment, I can imagine. And that, of course, includes thousands of backers that are going to be left out. They aren't even going to get on that list of creditors owed. So, recently they... in 2014, originally, they raised $1.2 million with 6,500 backers to fund Super Dungeon Explorer Forgotten King, an extension of their Super Dungeon Explorer line, which originally launched in 2011. That's early days. That's early crowdfunding days. Late 2015, they got almost $1.3 million from Super Dungeon Explorer Legends from 6,600 lucky people. And that was slated for delivery in 2016, December. And more than 7 years later, nobody has seen anything from that Legends campaign. They're asking the company now, please just give us PDFs and STLs. We'll be fine. Just, you know, whatever. Still nothing. Nothing has come from that. Nothing is shipped. And still, after that, they got 2,500 people to go for their Relic Knights second edition. And that game is also not being delivered and raised $380,000 on Kickstarter. Is this, you can kind of see the trajectory here. They kept going, though, like way past the point of sanity. And then in the real problems, they said, began in 2016, where their response was that because this lukewarm feedback from our rule set, we're just going to scrap the entire thing and start again. And of course, that means a huge amount of, you know, creation time. They have a lot, you know, to rewrite rules is not going to take just a minute. So they scrapped their rule set and then decided to redesign them. And that of course, raised the cost of this project and kept it from manufacturing or shipping development. That was the word I was looking for. So they raised the development time. And then to complicate things more, their lead designer, Dietrich Stella, had some heart problems and took 6 months off. So that didn't help either. And so now they have none of that money left, none of those millions left, and they still need about $750,000 to complete that last project, which doesn't sound like it's going to happen. So there was an update in 2019, February, that they've laid off a majority of their staff. Oh, but that was end of 2018. So they told people a little bit late that there weren't really any, there's nobody working here anymore. And then 4 months later, after that, they did the Starfinder Masterclass miniatures crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter, raised $450,000 from 2,200 backers. But fortunately, that project was taken over by Paizo. So to not have Starfinder get trashed along with this bankruptcy, Paizo took that over and will probably continue fulfillment of that. And then their last one, the last one they snuck in there, 2022, Archon was... they said that 71 of their 100 miniatures were still to be produced. So they got about 29 miniatures done for that game. But yeah, then they called it quits. So yeah, people are really, really stuck. There's no no end in sight. And the, you know, vultures are just going to pick the possibly $100,000 bones clean of that company. And that's going to be it. So it's kind of an end of an era.
Funny story, mm-hmm. Only kind of related. When I went to Gen Con in, what was it, 2015, mm-hmm. I stood in line, which I hate doing, because I wanted to talk to Z Garcia. I don't know if you know him, but he's the only sane person on the Dice Tower.
Yeah, I know. I know who you're talking about. Yeah.
He's the one that doesn't lead with his religion and stuff.
Right.
So I was standing in line. I didn't care about Tom Vassell or, God forbid, that Sam dude who's a nutball. But, you know, I want to talk to Z because he's cool. Mm-hmm. And while I was standing in line, Tom Vassell stuffs in my hand a Super Dungeon Explorer chibi miniature of himself.
Nice. Oh, wow.
So I have one from the bankrupted game.
Nice.
A collector's item. Maybe I should try to sell it to one of these poor Kickstarter people.
Yeah, right. Wow, I'm sure that's got a place on your mantle. That's so funny. A chibi. Isn't Tom Vassell already kind of chibi in his dimensions? Yeah.
Yeah. It worked pretty well.
Wow. Yeah, that's funny. So, you know, they kept cranking this stuff out. And for me, I don't like this Americanized. I'm not sure where, like, it sounds like most of the designers aren't Japanese, but I hate this, like, Western kind of co-opted version of chibi, because that's that shorthand character design that a lot of Japanese illustrators use to show their serious characters that are in serious sci-fi, you know, epic drama or whatever, as, you know, little joke things, like usually written in the margin at the end of panels or whatever, end of stories. And it was just the shorthand. This is not serious. This is not the real characters, but wouldn't it be funny if ha ha ha, you know? And it just became this aesthetic now that the internet, I think, inflated. So, but that was, you know, it was all over the place. There was always a chibi campaign of some measure in the like mid 2010s with the, kind of Ameritrash, you know, board games being super popular. The more plastic, the better the game was that early philosophy. And so that's interesting. I never got in on Super Dungeon Explorer, but a couple of the other, try to think something else that they did. And it was funny because that was the first time that I played in real life with my daughter with 5e when we did the that first starter set adventure. We use those chibi miniatures because they have orcs and, you know, all of the character classes and stuff. So we had chibi miniatures on a table for 5e. But that's it. I mean, I don't think we're going to see, it's going to be really hard for someone to come back with that look and style and have people not be reminded. Although I think Kaman did the chibi Marvel game, didn't they? Yeah. So maybe that style will never go away.
I think it's WizKids does the Star Trek skirmish game. That's kind of those models.
Are
chibi like.
Yeah. They have like a mall caricaturist proportion to them. A big head and a weird little body. Yeah. So that's too bad. I mean, it really sucks. So many people are going to be left out. And these games weren't cheap. You know, like if you went in, you could go in for $200, $400, $500 easily on these games, and you're just going to be out of that. And well, I guess though that, you know, is a little bit of a reflection on you. Did you really think you wanted $500 worth of chibi miniatures? So yeah, that's too bad. But yeah, it really does say that Kickstarter is changing. I think we're going to see smaller scale projects. The successes are going to be smaller. Everybody except Brandon Sanderson is going to be happy with six figures instead of their seven figure campaigns. But moving on to a success that you can't wait to happen. Something is in public playtest right now, and it's not Epic Warpath. It's even... I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's Critical Role and the Daggerheart. Yes, Daggerheart is here, giving you a chance to try that D&D rival that you've been waiting for. So, yeah, D12s, the neglected die, D12s. So that's coming. We've already seen, they've been playtesting. They've been having these, like, secret, super cool, like, get all the influencers in here to take photos and talk about it on their YouTube channels. Closed playtest sessions at conventions. And so we've seen some leaks about stuff coming out. And this is, again, just like we heard with Tales of the Valiant, a more beginner-friendly alternative to 5e. I mean, 5e does not have a learning curve that I would call daunting at all for new players. So I don't know why you have to dumb it down even more. Doesn't seem to be the you know, kind of design objective. But so this was announced last summer, and Spencer Stark, the creator of Alice is Missing, is heading this project, which was an interesting choice. I don't know much about their previous game design, but Alice is Missing is very unique. It's a very, you know, unique take on how to role play through text messages. So I don't know if that's going to inform Daggerheart all that well. But of course, Matt Mercer is also listed as a co-designer because name recognition and all that stuff. So yeah, they're going to make an approachable modern system, swapping the classic D20s for 12-sided dice. And the mechanic that I really hate so far, I haven't played it, but just as a passive observer, the hope and fear traits. So would you rather roll with hope or roll with fear, as if the world is divided between those two? So I guess that fits the you know, kind of millennial zoomer, everything they do is based on hope and fear. So they distilled that down pretty well, but our generation doesn't quite operate. I think chaos.
I would like to roll on apathy, please.
Apathy and hatred. Yeah. That's pretty much what we got. But yeah.
Condescension.
Yeah, condescension. Yes. So yeah, and they've got cards, so they're going to go in with the card thing because that sells more junk, because then the players have to buy cards too for the character's domain, ancestry, community, and subclass. So to create a character, you're basically putting cards together, and it will give you a unique selection of traits and skills and spells. Of course, spells too are on cards, in case you were worried. So this system has had an entire year of development, over a year. That's not a lot of time. Yeah, woo. And yes, I've been running limited playtests at Gen Con and other places just to get the hype machine going and the word out. And a quote from Stark says, Daggerheart is not a finished product yet. And in order to get there, we need people to play it and to break it. No, seriously. Break the game. All right. So this phase of playtesting will help us gather this much needed information for what from you to create the best possible game and let's see, the best game possible, and need your help to do that. They are asking for your assistance. So play that PDF and let them know what
let's
you
do like. Let's do it. Let's do it a live stream, Jeremy.
Oh, okay. Let's break that shit. Yeah, that would be fun. Yeah, so I guess they're going to do a toolkit on Demiplane. So they're working with Demiplane to do a character creation, kind of their nexus that they did for many other game systems. So that'll make it easy to easier than just a illustrationless PDF, kind of, you know, using the game. And especially if it's card based, I guess you know, you'll have those assets in the Demiplane toolkit. So, yeah, I'm curious. From the things I've seen, I'm not interested at all, but it would be fun to see how that actually works, like how your character is deciding hope and fear, and if that's like immersion breaking, or, you know, what exactly that kind of mechanic does. But it's available. It is out there in the wild.
Have they, do you know, because I haven't really read anything about the lore part of it at all. Is it kind of the MCDM Tales of the Valiant high fantasy heroic yada yada kind of thing?
I haven't gotten a full picture of that either. It's probably whatever the heck Critical Role is playing, like whatever, you know, I guess, yeah, probably that they're kind of continuing like high fantasy D&D style. There's like the only thing I've seen that sticks out is like there's a frog race now. There's a frog ancestry or whatever. So you're a little bipedal frog with a little backpack and a little sword. But so I hope it doesn't get too cutesy like that. I hope it you know, at least stays in the realm of, you know, something like RuneQuest or whatever, where there are ducks, but it's not like everybody's not a fuzzy, cute animal. Yeah, we'll see what... Because I know there's probably fans that would want to push it that way. Make it magical, furry adventure. Yeah, so we'll see what... I'm not sure as far as the setting, if they're kind of like shifting a little bit. It would seem... Because nobody else is going to be doing that. Everyone is doing a version of 5e. So it is basically the 5e, you know, setting, the 5e scale world. So it would be interesting if they shifted to something like lower magic or like a little bit, you know, detached from traditional like European based fantasy. That'd be cool. But then again, they might lose a ton of players doing that.
The skeptical side of me, roll with skepticism, doesn't expect them to do anything different than what they've done. Mm-hmm. Because if you look at Candela Obscura, that was like the most filed down, softened horror.
right.
Like it was like we wouldn't want to actually trigger anybody, so we're gonna just dress up like cute Victorians and
move along. Yeah, that may be. Yeah, we may see that in Daggerheart. We may see their kind of, you know, sensitivity. So Darrington Press can use like safety scissors as their like part of their logo. Yeah, it's not gonna hurt anybody. No one's getting hurt. It's all cool, man. Yeah. So Well, we'll see. Yeah, I'm curious about that too, because yeah, I agree with you about Candela Obscura. It was like, oh yeah, what if Cthulhu, what if cosmic horror wasn't really horrible? It was just kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Kind of background it and not make it such a big deal and like really get into the performance. Yes. All right. Well, Matt, as you know, I have been working diligently to get Grey Noise, the first episode of Grey Noise, up and running. And that involves hours of not only editing, but rendering. And I need to focus. And of course, I've relied heavily, heavily on coffee to do all of that. Probably the first 5 years of this channel are all caffeine-based. But I found a new way to prevent that crash, to prevent kind of the burnout. And the older I get, the jitterier coffee makes me. So it gets more and more unpleasant to stay caffeinated, and I don't get any sort of sustained benefit from it. But recently I have discovered, hey, on camera, Magic Mind. So Magic Mind in this little bottle is a really great solution for anybody that's experiencing that. Like if you're drinking too much coffee, it's affecting your sleep, you want something a little bit more sustained, what's in this little bottle will definitely help you. And the nice thing is you don't have to give up coffee. This isn't necessarily a coffee replacement. It will also work in cooperation with the ingredients in coffee and give you a more sustained focus, more sustained energy. So the main ingredient in here is matcha. So Japanese green tea. Oh, good. It's not keying out. Japanese green tea, as well as several herbs and mushrooms and things that are all proven to enhance awareness, alertness, and basically keep you focused. I think focus is the big thing that helps with any work you're doing digitally, any editing or data entry or anything. And the nice thing is the company gave me a chance to try Magic Mind for 5 days, and I did notice a significant difference in sustained focus. I shifted from a very damaging to my family life, a very damaging evening time work schedule, to getting my mornings back, basically being able to be up early and function in the morning instead of sleeping in and working into the wee hours. So and I would credit Magic Mind for giving me that. And they do recommend, if you want to try it, about 3 days before you're really going to feel the full effects of what's going on. So mental energy and focus is basically what it gives you. One cup of coffee in the morning, you can add this along with your coffee or your tea. And it's best, it's easiest to drink chilled, so keep it in the fridge, but the ingredients don't need, it won't spoil. The ingredients don't need to be refrigerated. And of course, the ingredients are all natural. It contains no sugar, nut-free, vegan, keto, and paleo-friendly. So it's not going to interfere with anything you're doing for your diet or your health. So so matcha, as I said, the Japanese green tea, lion's mane mushroom, and several other nootropic ingredients give you that desired effect. And if you would like to try this, we have a URL you can go to. So magicmind.com/upturned. So magicmind.com/upturned, UPTURNED, and use the code upturned20. So that's upturned, UPTURNED. NED20 to get a 20% discount on any purchase or a 56% discount on a subscription. So subscription is basically going to give you your daily supply, and it will just renew. So you'll get a 30-day supply that renews every month, and that will be more than half off with our code. So check that out and see what you think. If this is something that you've been looking for, because I basically ran on like 2 pots of black coffee a day was basically my work schedule. And that I can't do that anymore. It destroys me. And this is a really a nice alternative. And I've tried things in the past, like bulletproof coffee, put a little butter in your coffee, a little coconut oil, get a more sustained release of the caffeine. It's not, it doesn't do it, and it adds a ton of calories. So I couldn't switch to, you know, caffeinated soda or energy drinks. So Magic Mind was a great alternative. So try, if you'd like to try it, hit up our link and use the code. So thank you, Magic Mind, for the sponsorship, and we will be back to our regularly scheduled program. All right, well, what do we got left in this world here? Oh, yes, Awaken Realms. So the owners of GameFound, so one of the Kickstarter competing platforms for tabletop, they pulled some AI art, and it was, again, just like Hasbro was dealing with. So we have to question the laziness of some of these design departments. If these are contractors or if they're in-house designers, we got to question their laziness, because we keep seeing this with promotional images. So AI-generated art was used to promote the Deluxe Puerto Rico crowdfunding campaign. And but Awakened Realms didn't do anything about it until Ravensburger stepped in and said, hey, we're, you know, don't do this. We have a reputation to uphold here. So Puerto Rico 1897 Special Edition is currently crowdfunding by the game's licensor, Ravensburger. And so it's the deluxe edition of a classic economic strategy game. Everybody knows Puerto Rico. And basically they when they revealed the game, there were some promotional images that appeared to show those telltale signs of AI art, the weird blending and strange artifacts and wrong number of fingers. And so immediately upon being notified, Awakened Realms has pulled those images, but actually just replaced them with a blurred version of the box cover as background art. So I think it was a background image with the foreground, you know, showing the game components, and the background was the plastic sculpt of one of the ships in the game. So they just blurred the background art, that was their solution for it, instead of regenerating anything or recreating anything. So then they took a look at all of the remaining imagery in the campaign. It looks like, there is not anything else came up. It was just this promotional image. Ravensburger is a significant investor in GameFound, so their voice is listened to very well. They signed a $4.5 million deal in early 2022. So, but although they do say that on the GameFound blog post announcing Awakened Realms' slew of new projects for 2024, there still may be AI-generated art. So, yeah, I think the individual companies and things are going to have to go through and make sure that they're not being represented in that cheap-ass way. So a spokesperson for Ravensburger said, Awakened Realms has the license to develop and publish Puerto Rico Special Edition. As a licensor, Ravensburger reached out to Awakened Realms, who has already removed the temporary images that were being used to promote the project's campaign. Ravensburger also reinforced with Awakened Realms that generative AI cannot be used in any part of the art process for this Ravensburger game. And the Awakened Realms CEO then reiterated, like they always do, there will be no AI art in the final edition of Puerto Rico. So this keeps happening, right? Because we had that terraforming Mars project that raised $2.2 million and just said, hey, we got to do it because we don't want to pay anybody. We want as much of that $2 million for ourselves. Don't give it to the artists. And so this is going to keep coming up until we kind of come to terms with how these tools can be ethically used, if there can actually be an ethical version of these, if we can somehow, it could be pulling from a data set that isn't just completely pirated from the internet. But until that is settled, this is going to keep happening.
So I'm sorry. These are the same guys that did that silliness with terraforming Mars.
Oh, that was a different. That was Frick's Games and Stronghold Games. But it was I think that was a Kickstarter campaign. But but they're just saying as an example, these are happening in board games. But they said they are using it in production of the game itself. So yeah, Frick's Games was straightforward and saying, yeah, no, we're putting AI art in the game. This was promotion. The current example is promotion. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, we'll see. Exactly what exactly how this shakes down. And it's good to see that the platforms are, because if they don't, I think if when you're selling and even promoting products and you're going to be lazy about enforcing AI art, that means just more and more of it is going to happen until it's completely 100%. You know, if they're kind of allowed in the door, it's such a money saver for these companies that they're going to, because the biggest, you know, the writing and design of games is the biggest expense. So they're going to, if they can get around that, that will be, and it's also maybe the one that you can't, that may be harder to control. I'm sure, you know, materials and production costs can get overrun, but you budget for that. And, you never know with those creatives, how long it's going to take to, get it finished. Yeah. So again, we see, and it's funny because this was a classic game, so it's odd to see a classic board game being promoted in such a way.
Yeah, that sucks. I love Puerto Rico. I have the 10th anniversary edition, which is really nice.
Oh, nice.
It's nice that Ravensburger stepped in, because if what I recall with the Stronghold one, and what's the other company's name? Frixie?
Yeah, Frixie Games, yeah.
Frixie Games? Mm-hmm. Like, I kind of feel like everything that came out of that was, this is what we're doing, tough mm-hmm. stuff. You mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, have you seen pictures of my family? We're a family-owned company. Yeah, that was their the defense. Yeah. It's like, okay, so AI is okay then, right? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, they were just like, this is the future, go screw yourself. So, yeah, we'll see. We'll see how this shakes out. It's not over yet. All right, and a company that finally figured out, or I guess it's a licensor that figured out how to do something. So HeroScape is getting a miraculous revival, a second revival attempt, but this one looks to be successful. So we talked about that weird failed crowdfunder where Hasbro kind of threw this Age of Annihilation, revival of HeroScape, a $250 game that was one set. They did it on their HasLab platform, so it wasn't even like an established crowdfunding platform, and just expected people to, you know, pay them $2.5 million to even think about reviving it, or $2 million. Mm-hmm. Yeah, $2 million goal. Yeah, so a $250 price point for a lot of stuff, but if you're not going to get any new customers. You're only going to get the guys that are buying the $500 lightsaber replicas off of Hasbro to do that. They got 8,000 people to back this and still didn't get anywhere near their goal. So they fell short, not like, you know, not, it was over half, but still that was a silly way to set things up. But recently Hasbro kind of changed their approach, and instead of these old IPs that they have, instead of trying to do it themselves because they don't really, you know what they're doing as far as like what people want to see, they're licensing it to Renegade. So Renegade Game Studio has a licensing deal, and they've got several properties that they're working on, Diplomacy, Axis and Allies, so a lot of the Avalon Hill stuff. And after a year of development, they are finally releasing HeroScape. So they're going to do a couple of different ways that I think it's going to please the most amount of people, because literally some people on that Hasbro campaign were just saying, we just want the hexes. I've got all of the minis from the entire history of this stupid game. Give us more hexes. My old hexes are cracking and falling apart. We want more hexes. That's all they wanted, and they weren't going to give it to them. But Renegade has changed that. So they're going to do a larger master set and a more economical two-player battle box. So the master set is going to be about $125, half of the price of what Hasbro was offering. It's going to give you 20 unpainted miniatures and 74 interlocking hexes. The battle box, which is their beginner set for two players, the Battle for Wellspring, will be $45, so a quarter of what Hasbro wanted. 6 unpainted miniatures and 31 tiles, including their new opaque Wellspring water terrain, and also 4 scenarios. So they're kind of dividing things up, and I've seen their future releases. They're going to break that down even further. So they are going to do releases of only hex terrain, and going both ways with painted and unpainted miniatures. So of course the painted miniatures are going to cost you more, but so the the other, let me see, the Wellspring. So the Grove at Laura's Edge terrain pack. So the terrain pack will be the first of many that they say expansions that will give you all the terrain that you're going to need. So three interlocking jungle pieces, six underbush pieces, and to elevate your battlefield. So yeah, so a lot of trees and things that kind of the more complex terrain that people probably wanted to see from Hasbro previously. And then they're also going to do, for both the Master Set and the Wellspring two-player box, premium painted editions. So they will include the same content, but with fully assembled premium painted miniatures. So we don't know what that, I haven't seen photos of anything, and I don't know what that means, if it's going to be above WizKids quality or not. It very well could be, but it's probably going to come close to doubling the price tag, because these price points were pretty low for what they were giving you. But yeah, so amazing that the total of and so the they're kind of scheduled to be releasing these game scenarios and packs that will add up to 330 hexes worth of terrain. So there we go. The players shall be satisfied. Yeah, and plus you'll have new scenarios and things. So it's not going to be just dumping more plastic on you. You'll have more of the actual game to play. There isn't any discussion, maybe that was already settled, whether they were going to revise the rules or not. I think that was a, because they were working with someone from the HeroScape community for that initial Hasbro release to kind of update the rules and work with, you know, somebody that had a voice of the players to kind of see what they were going to do. So they haven't said what is going to be changed about the game, or if they're just going to go with the rules as written back in the day. But, yeah, and I guess it's going to be co-branded. Renegade Games and Avalon Hill, they'll be co-branding it because they're licensing it. But good news, yeah, for people that were really disgusted by Hasbro's handling of that. And I think you would be even more disgusted if that actually had fulfilled, you know, had been successful and fulfilled, because the quality that Hasbro would have done with that, if Hero Quest was any sort of example, would have been pretty bad. So we'll see. We'll see if Renegade has a higher, you know, standard of what they want to produce, and if what the premium stuff looks like, what the premium painted looks like, because that'll be a great solution for people that you know, don't want to get involved in miniature painting. And board game miniatures are not the most fun to paint, because they're just not, there's not a lot of detail there sometimes, and they're a little bendy. But cool. So yeah, HeroScape is officially back. So this is these are all releases for 2024.
That's awesome. Like, I played a lot of HeroScape back in the day. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a little concerned if they do tweak the system, because it's a pretty simple system. Uh-huh. Part of the reason I was able to play it so much with my local gamer friends was because it was simple. It wasn't a ruler game. You just counted hexes. Mm-hmm. And so it was real easy to get people into it and playing right away. So I hope that if they do tweak it, they don't somehow accidentally overcomplicate it or something.
Right. Or like add mechanics.
Right. Cause you don't really want more mechanics, because it was kind of like, almost like a collectible card game, in that every unit mm-hmm. would have its own special power. So every unit you'd have a little card for, and it would tell you what they could do that was outside of the core rules. So mm-hmm. you wouldn't really want more core rules.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're already tracking all these things these unique units can do. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so hopefully they don't mess with it too much. I am curious, too, to see the painted ones, because that's going to be the thing that holds me up, is I already have a ton of miniatures that I'm not painting right now. So if I could purchase painted miniatures for it, that's definitely the way I would go.
Nice. Yeah, so a little bit of additional information. So those Wave 1 boxes that we talked about are going to be out in August of this year. And they're also planning on supporting competitive play at local hobby stores with tournaments, free scenarios released every month. And they will eventually expand that to include Army Builder Tools, an online website called the Battle Network, and a championship planned for Gen Con 2025. So yeah, that's yeah. So it's fun. It's so it looks like they've got the right approach. They're not doing this as a collector's item or some kind of, you know, revival thing. It's like, let's get, you know, the people that have, you know, disposable income and almost grandchildren to, you know, to buy these, to buy this old game again. They're actually going to try to support a community and, you know, do run organized play. That's great.
That is cool.
Yes. Yeah, so good luck with that, Renegade. And yeah, show Hasbro how it's done because they sure the hell don't know what they're doing anymore. They're not a toy company though. That's, I know that Hasbro has said they are not a toy company. So that's the only thing they know.
And when you show Hasbro how it's done, make sure they bring someone from WotC in with them to watch.
Yeah, right. Yeah, Kyle, you should be there. I want you to take notes, Kyle. Oh, man. Oh, yeah. And just a quick update on that. We are already at day 412 of Kyle refusing to resign when he said he would. So I don't know. Maybe we're 1,000 days out before the mothership comes and takes all the people like him away as they leave the job market. But yeah, we'll keep you posted on Kyle Brink and his miraculous his miraculous career that is against every natural law that there is.
Oh, Teflon Kyle.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for this week. So where can people find you, Matt?
I am on Instagram and Threads. It's at Hargald. That's HARGALD. Where recently I've just been putting out our little teaser video for the Gray Noise, I guess we'll call it, roundtable we did, which was a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that coming up. And I was talking about how setting up a scene in a game affects the outcome in the sense that in Theater of the Mind games, I think when you're in a scene where there's a threat, it's more likely that your players will resolve it non-violently than if you present them with a tactical map and then suddenly it's like, oh, well, violence is clearly the solution. So I had a very unscientific theory about that, but yeah, just a little musing. So drop by and say hi. How about you?
Ah, so I am trying to produce a single panel gag cartoon. So Abuse Cartoons on YouTube and Twitch. Eventually, I'm going to get back to my live streaming. I am doing it kind of sporadically, but it's a cartoon on gocomics.com. And you can read it on gocomics.com/domesticabuse and watch the live stream when it happens. There's a ton of archives on the channel of me drawing these cartoons. So if you have a favorite, you can actually by date go back and find the creation of it on both YouTube and Twitch at Abuse Cartoons and abusecartoons.com. And if you like what we're doing here with the weekly, please consider becoming a weakling. So you can do that by visiting patreon.com/upturntable and pledging to our weakling tier, which says that you want to watch more of the weekly, and you can tell us exactly what you'd like to see on the show, the topics you're interested in. If Hasbro, if kicking Hasbro is not your thing, if you want to see more indie game focus, if you want to see more the fall of Wizards of the Coast, whatever your taste is, let us know and we'll talk more about that. And so you can support us on Patreon. The website is UpturnTable. And you can also become a member of the YouTube channel. So there's a join button below this video if you're watching us. And you can become a member and get the same benefits except for the RSS feed. So the audio for this live stream goes onto the RSS feed for Patreon that is only audio but sweetened so it sounds a little bit nicer than it does on YouTube, easier on your headphones. So, yeah. And stay tuned for so tomorrow about this time we'll be running our second session of Dune. So they're going to dig into it and find out what this Red Door cult is all about. And yeah, so we will we'll be back next week. And you never know, the host, it's a random thing. We actually just was pull lots every week. So Matt gets stuck with co-hosting duty sometimes.
I get crammed in this TV.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I gotta lift it up and put it on the desk, and it's a whole thing. But thanks for joining us, and we will be back again next week. Goodbye.
Bye.